Hey everyone, welcome to the show. You ever lay awake at night, just totally stressed out about some problem you're facing, and you think, man, wouldn't it be incredible if I could just wake up tomorrow and poof, that problem was just gone?
Like magic.
Yeah, exactly. Like magically
That'd
solved.
be amazing.
Right, just that sense of relief, that weight lifted off your shoulders. That's kind of the feeling we're going for today, in this deep dive.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
But before we really get into it, just a quick reminder to hit that like button, subscribe to the channel, and hey, if you know anyone who could use a little reset in their life, share this with them. All right, so how do we actually like make those problems disappear? Not literally, obviously, but find a smarter, maybe more effective way to deal with them. That's where this book, Reset: How to Change What's Not Working by Dan Heath comes in.
I've heard good things about that one.
Oh, it's good. It's packed with like practical strategies and these really inspiring stories about people and even whole organizations that managed to turn like what seemed like impossible situations completely around. Yeah. And we're going to unpack some of those key takeaways today with our expert here.
Happy to be here.
Ready to dive in.
Let's do it.
Okay, so I went through the book, highlighted all the like most interesting parts.
Awesome.
And the core concept, the one that really stuck with me, is this idea of finding leverage points.
Leverage points.
Yeah, it's kind of like imagine you're trying to move this giant boulder. You could push and shove with
I
all your
tend to
might.
rough dust yourself.
Exactly, and probably get nowhere.
Right.
But what if you found the right spot, the sweet spot? You apply a little force in just the right place, and boom,
Huh.
the whole thing shifts.
I see. So it's not about brute force, it's about finding that point of maximum impact.
Exactly. And what's so cool is that Reset doesn't just say, hey, find these leverage points. It actually gives you a framework for doing it.
So it's not just some vague self-help, think positive kind of
You
thing.
don't know, it's practical. It's like a toolkit.
Love that.
It lays out five, count them, five specific ways to find those leverage points. Go and see the work. Consider the goal of the goal. That one's a bit of a mind bender. Study the bright spots, target the constraint, and map the system. And each one is full of these real-world examples.
Real world. So no hypotheticals, actual stories.
Actual stories. It makes it so much more relatable.
I bet. Let's start with go and see the work. Seems like that would be a good place to start.
Yeah, that one's all about how our assumptions can totally blind us to like what's really happening.
Yeah, we get stuck in our own heads.
Big time. Like the book talks about this school principal who decided to like shadow a student for the day to really understand what their experience was like.
Wow, that's commitment.
Right. And he ended up running sprints in the gym with all the kids watching.
Huh. I bet that was an eye-opener.
Totally. And by actually getting out of his office and into the like trenches, he saw things he never would have from behind his desk. It challenges those preconceived notions we all have. Like the book also talks about this factory. They were shutting down their main machine like every day at lunch
Why?
because of an energy problem that had been fixed years ago.
What?
They're
Seriously.
crazy, right? They were just doing it out of habit.
It's wild how we can adapt to inefficiencies without even realizing it.
It's like we become immune to the problem.
Exactly. That's why go and see the work is so powerful. It forces you to face the actual reality, not your idea of it.
Exactly. Okay, so the second way to find these leverage points, consider the goal of the goal. This one really hit home for me. It's all about asking yourself, what am I really trying to achieve here? Like, dig a little deeper, go beyond those surface level desires. For example, you might say your goal is to get fit, lose weight, right?
Sure, pretty common goal.
But maybe the real goal, the goal of the goal, is to feel more confident, more energetic.
I see what you mean. It's about the underlying motivation.
Exactly. The book calls this the miracle question. Imagine you wake up tomorrow, poof, the problem's gone. What's the first thing you notice?
That's a good question.
It helps you cut through the noise and figure out what really
Oh, I
matters.
like that.
Like there's this example in the book about a couple, they were having a rough time. The husband, he wanted them to share responsibility for the kids more equally. But when they really dug into it, asked that miracle question, they realized what he really craved was for his wife to just like look up from her book when he came home, you know?
Just to acknowledge him.
Yeah, just to show she was happy to see him.
That's powerful. A small change, but potentially huge for their relationship.
Right. And sometimes the most direct route to that goal of the goal is to skip the first goal entirely.
Really? How so?
Well, like this example in Reset. They were trying to help veterans with disabilities get loan forgiveness.
Okay.
And at first, they were focused on making the application process easier, you know, less bureaucratic.
Makes sense.
But then they were like, wait, why are we messing around with all these forms?
Right. Just forgive the loans.
Exactly. Problem solved. Sometimes the simplest solution is the best one.
Love that. Okay, so we've talked about go and see the work and consider the goal of the goal. What's next?
All right. The third strategy for finding those leverage points, study the bright spots. This one's all about focusing on what's working well, not just what's going wrong.
We do tend to fixate on problems, don't we?
Well, for sure. But often the solutions are right there in front of us. We just got to learn to recognize them.
I feel like I need to write that down.
Seriously. Like, you know how for years the Air Force designed their cockpits based on the average pilot?
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, in theory. But the problem is there's no such thing as an average pilot.
Right. Everyone's different.
Exactly. So they were missing out on all this valuable insight from their top performers.
Yeah, from the folks who are already excelling.
Exactly. So that's why study the bright spots is so important. It's about identifying those pockets of success and figuring out what made them possible.
Makes sense. Do you have like a real life example of that?
Oh, for sure. Reset talks about these animal shelters, right?
Yeah.
They were facing euthanasia rates of like 70%. It was heartbreaking.
Wow.
But they managed to save millions of cats by studying this one simple idea, return to field.
Return to field.
Basically, it's about trapping, neutering, and then releasing healthy stray cats instead of keeping them caged up.
So instead of trying to shelter every cat, they focused on controlling the population?
Right. And it worked. A seemingly small change with a huge ripple effect. It shows how success doesn't always have to be, you know, this massive revolutionary thing. Sometimes it's just about scaling up what's already working.
I like that. Simple, but effective.
Okay, you ready for the fourth way to find leverage points?
Hit me with it.
It's target the constraint. This one's all about identifying that bottleneck, that one thing holding everything back.
Ah, the weakest link in the chain.
You got it. Every system has constraints. The key is to find the biggest one and focus all your energy there.
Okay, I'm following. Can you give me an example, like from the book or something?
Oh, yeah. It talks about this Chick-fil-A. It's one of the highest performing in the whole chain. They serve a car every 9 seconds.
Wow, that's impressive.
Right. And they do it by laser focusing on their biggest constraint.
Which is?
The car queue spilling out onto the street. They came up with all sorts of clever ways to manage that bottleneck. And it made their whole system way more efficient.
It makes sense. So find the choke point and fix it. I guess the question is, how do you know what that constraint is?
Well, that's where things get tricky, right? It's not always obvious. It's important to define the constraint within the context of your goal. Different goals will have different bottlenecks. Like, even something as personal as couples therapy can have constraints. The book gives an example of a therapist she realized her biggest constraint was, wait for it, the couple's inability to see anything positive about each other.
Oh, wow. That's tough. So how did she tackle that?
She had them write down positive things they noticed about their partner on sticky notes and then leave them for each other to find.
Sticky note appreciation.
Exactly. Super simple. But it shifted their whole dynamic. They started focusing on the good instead of just the bad. Pretty cool, right?
Absolutely. Okay, so we've got four down, one to go. What's the fifth way to find those leverage points?
All right, the fifth one is map the system. This one's all about swimming out, seeing the bigger picture, and really challenging those assumptions that might be limiting us.
Okay, yeah, we can get so stuck in our own little worlds.
Totally. Like, there's this common belief that if low-income students can just graduate college, they're set, right? They've got a secure future.
Yeah, that's the goal, right? Get that degree.
But what if the bottleneck isn't the education itself, but the job search process?
Oh, interesting point. They might have the skills, but not know how to market themselves.
Exactly. That's why some folks came up with this idea of high-dosage career counseling, basically intensive support to help these grads navigate the job market.
And did it work?
Every single client who went through this program landed a better job within months.
Wow. That's amazing. So it was about addressing the hidden barriers, the things that weren't immediately obvious.
Right. It's about looking beyond those individual silos and finding those hidden levers within the system.
I love that. Hidden levers. That's a great way to put it. Do you have another example of this map the system idea in action?
Oh, absolutely. There's this story in Reset about a radiology clinic. They had these crazy long wait times.
Oh, I hate that.
The worst.
Yeah.
So they decided to map out the entire patient journey. Like, from the moment they walked in the door to the moment they left.
Okay, it makes sense.
And they realized that a simple change in who administered the contrast dye could make a huge difference.
Really?
Yeah. Instead of having the nurses do it, they had the receptionists take it over.
Oh, interesting. So that freed up the nurses to focus on other tasks.
Exactly. And it drastically reduced those wait times.
Yeah.
A small change, massive ripple effect.
That's the beauty of systems thinking, isn't it?
Totally. Okay, so we've explored these five powerful ways to identify those leverage points. But now the question is, how do we actually make things happen? How do we take those insights and turn them into real change?
That's the big question. And I'm guessing that's where the second part of reset comes in, right?
You know it. It's all about restacking resources. It's not just about cutting back. It's about strategically shifting effort from those low-value tasks to the high-impact leverage points we just talked about.
This sounds really interesting. It's easy to get bogged down in the day-to-day and lose sight of what really matters.
I feel that. It's like we're always busy, but are we busy with the right things? Reset gives this example of a mom who is struggling with her daughter's ADHD.
Oh, that can be so challenging.
It was really stressful for both of them, especially in the mornings, trying to get ready for school. But then she shifted her resources. Instead of having these chaotic mornings, she prepped everything the night before.
Ah, so she front-loaded the work.
Exactly. And it made a huge difference. The mornings became calmer, more positive.
That's a great example of how a simple change in timing can make a big impact.
Right. And the book also talks about how businesses often overcoddle their worst customers and undercoddle their best.
Wait, what? So they're bending over backwards for the clients who give them the most headaches.
It sounds crazy, but it happens all the time. And it can happen in our personal lives, too. Are we giving enough attention to the relationships that truly matter?
Good question. Food for thought.
So Reset offers four key principles for this restacking resources idea.
Four principles. All right, I'm ready. Lay them on me.
They're all about maximizing impact and achieving real, lasting change.
Sounds good to me. Let's hear them. Okay, let's dive into those four principles for restacking resources. You mentioned maximizing impact, achieving real change, all that good stuff.
Yeah. The first one is start with a burst. Uh-huh. Ever feel like your time is just scattered? Like time confetti all over the place.
Oh, tell me about it. Constantly switching between tasks, never really making much progress.
Exactly. And the book argues that this constant task switching just drains our energy, makes us feel totally overwhelmed.
Makes sense. Too much juggling, not enough focus.
Right. Instead, Reset is all about these bursts, like dedicated blocks of time for focused work, zero distractions.
I can get behind that. So what, like work nonstop for 8 hours straight?
No, not necessarily. It's more about intentional focus. Like, you know, design sprints where a team sets aside a specific amount of time to tackle a challenge.
Okay, yeah, I've heard of those. Pretty common in tech.
Right. Or remember that radiology clinic we talked about?
Yeah.
The one with the crazy wait times?
Yeah.
They did a 5-day blitz to try and eliminate those. They just focused all their energy on that one constraint, and it worked.
I bet. Intense focus can definitely lead to some breakthroughs. But it's not just for, like, creative projects, right?
Not at all. Reset talks about this manager at ExxonMobil. He was facing a massive backlog of data archives, years of stuff piled up.
Sounds thrilling. What did he do?
He decided to dedicate every Thursday to just archiving. They called them Attack Thursdays.
Attack Thursdays. Love it.
And by focusing their energy in these bursts, they actually made a huge dent in that backlog.
Wow, so it actually worked.
It did.
Yeah.
So I guess the takeaway here is identify those high-impact tasks, the ones that really move the needle.
Right.
And then carve out time, dedicated blocks of time to focus on those and knock them out.
Make it happen.
Exactly.
Okay.
So principle number two for restacking resources is recycle waste. That sounds kind of counterintuitive, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
But it's about finding value in the things we usually just discard or overlook.
Okay, I'm listening.
So think about how a city, like, optimizes its trash collection, mm-hmm. right? The book gives this example of Asheboro, North Carolina. They used to send out these specialized trucks for, like, bulk trash pickup.
Okay.
Even if there were only a few pickups to be made.
That does seem kind of wasteful.
Total waste.
Right.
So they switched to a point-to-point system.
What's that?
Basically, they only send those trucks to the places where those specific items need to be picked up.
Oh, so they're not just driving around all day hoping to find some bulk trash.
Exactly. It saved them fuel, reduced wear and tear on the trucks. The whole system became way more efficient.
Ah.
Right. So they essentially recycled that wasted time and effort.
Okay. Yeah, I see what you mean.
But this idea goes beyond just, like, literal trash. It's about identifying anything in our work or our lives that doesn't really add value and figuring out how to eliminate it or repurpose it.
Like what? Give me some examples.
Oh, think about it. Unnecessary meetings. Those procedures that everyone hates but no one ever questions.
Oh, yeah. We've all been there.
Right. Even those little time-wasting habits we all have. Scrolling through social media, you know?
Guilty.
The book even talks about how we can recycle waste in our relationships.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Like, are we spending too much energy on people who drain us?
And not enough on those who lift us up. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Right. It's all about being intentional with our time and our energy, making sure we're investing those things in the things that actually matter.
I love that.
Okay, ready for principle number 3.
Hit me.
It's do less and more. Again, sounds a little contradictory.
It does.
But it's about making smart choices about where we focus our efforts.
So it ties into those previous principles, right? Eliminate the waste, focus on the high impact stuff.
Exactly. Now we're talking about choosing what to do and what not to do.
Choices, choices.
The book asks this question. What if we are under-coddling the most important people in our lives and over-coddling the least?
Ooh, that's a good one. So like we're bending over backwards for people who don't appreciate it while neglecting those who actually deserve our attention.
Exactly. And it happens in businesses too, you know, focusing on the wrong customers or the wrong projects.
It's like that 80-20 rule, right? 80% of our results come from 20% of our efforts.
That's it. So the key is to figure out what that crucial 20% is and prioritize that.
Okay, but how do we do that?
Well, the book recommends this tool. It's called the Stop, P, Start, Less, More Quadrant.
What's that?
It's basically a way to help teams or even individuals decide what to focus on and what to let go of.
Ooh, I like that. It's like a decision-making framework.
Exactly. All right, ready for the fourth and final principle.
Bring it on.
It's tap motivation. I think we can all agree it's way easier to work on something when we actually care about it, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Passion projects are the best.
Right. But how do we tap into that motivation for ourselves and for others, even when the task isn't inherently exciting?
Yeah. How do you make spreadsheet analysis fun?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And Reset actually offers some pretty cool strategies for that. One of the big takeaways is that motivation isn't something you can force on someone.
You can't just tell someone to be motivated.
Exactly. It's about understanding what drives them, what they care about.
So it's like finding that personal connection to the work.
Right. Like, remember that story in the book about the doctor who was trying to help his patient manage his diabetes?
You vaguely remind me.
Instead of lecturing him about blood sugar and all that, he framed it in terms of the patient's love for hunting and fishing.
Oh, yeah. He wanted to spend time with his grandkids.
Right. The doctor helped him see that taking care of his health would allow him to keep doing those things he loved.
Ah, so he tapped into his motivation by connecting it to something meaningful.
Exactly. And sometimes tapping into motivation can be a little more playful. Like that dad who turned cleaning his kid's room into a game.
Hide the evidence.
Yes. It's amazing how a simple shift in perspective can transform a chore into a challenge, you know?
Totally. It's like gamifying everyday life.
Exactly. Reset also talks about how powerful recognition can be as a motivator.
Oh, for sure. People want to feel appreciated.
Right. The book tells this story about the former CEO of Home Depot. He was really big on customer service. Wanted to encourage that in his employees. So he'd carry these Homer Fun coins in his pocket.
Homer Fun coins.
Yeah. And whenever he saw an employee going above and beyond for a customer, he'd give him a coin and thank them personally.
I bet that meant a lot to them.
It totally did. It sent the message that their work was valued. And it created a culture where people were motivated to go the extra mile. Speaking of culture.
Ooh. Yeah. Culture can be a big factor in all of this.
It can make or break any initiative. The tricky thing is it's often unspoken, you know, like we don't really notice it until it's gone or until it's stifling us.
So true. So how do we deal with that? How do we change a culture that's resistant to change?
Well, Reset says that we can shape culture, even in big organizations, by being intentional about what we reward and what stories we tell.
Intentional. Okay. Can you give me an example?
Sure. The book talks about this library in Texas. It was on the verge of shutting down. But then this new director came in and totally revitalized the place.
Wow. How?
And she challenged the existing culture. They were obsessed with rules and procedures. She called it the shrimp tail doctrine.
The shrimp tail doctrine.
Yeah. All about focusing on tiny details, you know, and missing the bigger picture.
Okay. Yeah. So how did she change that?
She flipped the script, started saying yes to new ideas, encouraging community involvement, and focusing on making the library a fun, welcoming place to be.
So she made it more people-centered.
Exactly. And it worked. The library went from this dusty old building to a bustling community hub.
That's incredible. So she changed the whole vibe, the whole culture.
Yeah, by empowering people and changing the narrative.
I love that. Okay, we've talked about individuals, teams, organizations. But what about those really big systemic problems like climate change?
Oh, yeah, the big ones. Reset actually has a whole chapter dedicated to that.
Really? What does it say?
It's all about finding those leverage points, even within complex systems. Like, he talks about the Environmental Defense Fund, the EDF.
Okay.
They were trying to figure out how to slow down global warming. Daunting task, right?
That's an understatement.
Right. So they were looking for these hidden levers that nobody was really paying attention to.
Yeah.
And they realized that methane emissions were a huge factor.
Methane, isn't that like way worse than carbon dioxide?
It is, but it also doesn't stay in the atmosphere as long. Ah. So the EDF was like, okay, if we can reduce methane emissions quickly, it'll have a significant impact on slowing down climate change.
Interesting. But how do you even begin to tackle something like that?
Well, they found that a lot of these emissions were coming from leaks in natural gas pipelines and wells, stuff that could be fixed pretty easily with technology we already have.
So they weren't trying to like invent some crazy new technology. They were just plugging the holes.
Exactly.
Right.
And they started working with energy companies to actually find and fix those leaks. And they've already made some pretty impressive progress in reducing methane emissions.
That's amazing. So even with a problem as huge as climate change, there are still leverage points we can find if we look hard enough.
Mm, that's the point. And what I love about Reset is that it doesn't just talk about these ideas in some abstract way.
Yeah, it's not just theory.
Right. It's full of real-world examples, practical strategies that anyone can use.
It's about making change actually happen.
Yes. And one of the big messages is that change is possible, even when it feels overwhelming. It all starts with being willing to challenge our assumptions.
Ask those tough questions.
Exactly. And then taking those first steps, even if they're small.
It's about finding those leverage points, restacking our resources, and getting to work.
I love it. And as Dan Heath says in Reset, change doesn't have to be massive and overwhelming.
Small steps can lead to big results.
That's it. Small, targeted actions, aligned with clear goals and fueled by motivation, can unlock incredible results.
Words to live by.
Well, that brings us to the end of part two of our deep dive into Reset. But don't worry, we'll be back next time to explore even more of the book's amazing insights. You know, as we were talking about all this, something from Reset really stuck with me. This idea of accelerating learning.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
It's not just about trying new things. It's about like how quickly you can get feedback so you can make adjustments.
Right. Course correct.
Yeah. Huh. Reset gives this example of this guy, Tom Chi, a rapid prototyping expert. He was working with a company trying to figure out how to keep their top executives from leaving.
Okay, high stakes.
Totally. And they had all these ideas, but hadn't actually tried any of them.
Just stuck in meeting rooms, debating.
Pretty much. And Tom Chi was like, why are we wasting time talking when we could be testing these things out?
Makes sense. Get out of the boardroom.
Exactly. So he convinced them to try these ideas out with some senior executives using, like, role-playing.
Interesting. Like a simulation.
Yeah. And you know what? They quickly realized that their favorite idea, this executive exchange program, was actually terrible.
The executives hated it.
Hated it. They pointed out all these flaws the company hadn't even thought of.
Wow. So testing those assumptions saved them from making a huge mistake.
Right. It's like fail fast, learn fast. But accelerating learning isn't just about avoiding failures. It's about spotting successes quickly too, you know?
Yeah. So you can double down on what's working.
Exactly. Like there's this story about how NPR uses this agile approach for developing their shows, their radio programs and podcasts.
I can see that. Yeah. Constantly trying new things, seeing what sticks.
Right. They'll start with a bunch of ideas, test them out in small, low-cost ways, and then iterate based on the feedback.
Smart.
And that's how they created some of the biggest hits, like TED Radio Hour and Invisibilia.
Wow. Those are big shows. It's proof that this approach really works.
It makes you wonder, like, what other industries could benefit from this kind of thinking?
It's got to be applicable to almost any field, right? Where you need to innovate, adapt quickly.
I think so. And you know, it's interesting, this accelerated learning idea, it really connects back to those leverage points we talked about earlier. Because by testing things out, gathering feedback quickly.
You can zero in on what really matters.
Exactly. You find those points of highest impact and put your energy there.
It's like you're constantly refining your understanding of the system.
Exactly. Okay, I want to go back to something we touched on before. Those big systemic challenges that can feel kind of overwhelming.
Yeah, the ones that make you feel like, what can I actually do about this?
Right. But Reset has some really inspiring stories of people and organizations that have tackled these huge problems and made a real difference.
Like what?
Well, there's this story about the Million Cat Challenge.
The Million Cat Challenge?
Yeah. They were trying to save, literally, millions of cats in animal shelters.
Oh, wow. That's ambitious.
Huge problem.
Yeah.
Right? Too many cats, not enough resources, and high euthanasia rates.
Yeah. That's a lot to tackle.
It seemed impossible. But they found this leverage point. They focused on a practice called return to field.
What's that?
So basically, they trap, neuter, and then release healthy stray cats back into their environment instead of trying to keep them all in shelters.
Interesting. So they're trying to manage the population instead of just reacting to it?
Exactly. And it actually worked. By reducing the number of breeding cats, the overall stray population went down.
So fewer cats ended up in shelters in the first place.
Right. And that meant fewer euthanasias.
Yeah.
The Million Cat Challenge has been incredibly successful. It's really changed the landscape of animal welfare.
That's a powerful example of how a shift in thinking can have huge ripple effects.
And sometimes those most effective solutions, they're the ones that seem kind of radical at first, you know? Like that Brazilian hospital we talked about.
Yeah, the one with the burnt out staff.
Right. And instead of, you know, bringing in consultants or whatever, they decided to empower their own employees to lead the change.
And it worked, right?
Big time. Mm. They figured out what was frustrating the staff, gave them the freedom to come up with solutions, and then, like, track their progress.
And that led to happier employees, better patient care, and they even saved money. It's pretty incredible.
It shows how powerful these principles in Reset can be. We can apply this stuff to any area of our lives.
Yeah, from our personal habits to those big systemic problems we face as a society.
Reset gives us a framework to tackle those issues in a more effective way. It's a call to action, you know?
It is. It's like, hey, we can actually make a difference. It's not hopeless.
Exactly. And I think that's a great note to end on. This has been such a great deep dive into Reset, how to change what's not working.
I agree. It's given me so much to think about.
Me too. And for all of you listening, we'd love to hear your thoughts on the episode. What was your favorite aha moment or takeaway from Reset?
Yeah, share your insights.
Hit us up on social media. And until next time, happy resetting.